I think about it all the time. We've been conditioned to think about it. That is the pattern, is even when you feel good, you know it's not gonna last. You know that next medication is gonna fail. You know that even if you eat a bad meal and your body doesn't like it, you're like, oh my goodness, am I flaring? What have I done to myself? Why did I do that, right? And blame it on all the wrong things. And it is a conditioned response to live in fear of the next flare, even when you've been living in remission for a long period of time.
This is Kelly, who got diagnosed with ulcerative colitis at age 22 in Amarillo, Texas. Like many IBD patients, Kelly lived a long roller coaster experience of failing treatments until she found one that finally pulled her into remission. Kelly wasn't just busy navigating colitis in her early 20s. She also juggled marriage and motherhood. And today, she tells us all about how she managed to fight her disease while trying to hold on to a normal life. This is Talking Shit, presented by Colitis Unfiltered. My name is Frank Tabering, and Kelly, welcome to the show.
I am so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for taking your time and to talk to me a little bit about your IBD journey. So I'd say let's get straight into it. I want to start off by setting the context, right, so that our audience kind of knows your story a little bit, and then we'll dive a little bit deeper. Tell me a little bit about your journey from diagnosis to where you are today.
It has been such a roller coaster. Like you mentioned, I was 22 years old. So just getting used to life, newly married. I had a one-year-old son, and I had left him home for the first time ever. And I was off at this conference, and I had this insane level of excruciating pain. It wore me out, just brought me to the floor. And that was terrifying. What I hadn't been telling people for months and months and months is that I was rectally bleeding. And my 22-year-old self was humiliated and embarrassed by that. And I was just really hoping and praying that it would just go away. Like, that's how naive I was at the time, and just hoping that it would disappear. But then that pain hit and it broke me, ended up going to the emergency room. The emergency room nurses were convinced that I must have had like some STD or something, which was so wrong and so humiliating for them to approach my symptoms in that way. It's just appalling when I look back at it. Sent me to go see my OBGYN. He's the one who referred me to a gastroenterologist. So, yeah, from there, then had the colonoscopy, talked about the bleeding that I was hiding and couldn't hide any longer, the pain that kicked in. And then first colonoscopy, I was diagnosed with moderate to severe ulcerative colitis. So that was the jumping point from there.
You often hear about misdiagnoses and doctors really taking a lot of time to figure out that it is IBD. And STD, that's a first for me. Oh, I got to tell you.
It was so embarrassing. So, and just devaluing, right? To be addressed in that way. So.
Yeah. But luckily you found a specialist who diagnosed you properly, ulcerative colitis. So going back at age 22, I mean, you've sort of completed your teenage years, but you were still young. Hearing the words ulcerative colitis come out of somebody else's mouth, did that mean anything to you back then? Have you heard about it? And also, how did you react mentally to getting these news? And did your doctor actually fill you on what this disease is and what that means for you, for your life, for the future?
As best as I can remember, you know, it's been a little while, but no, I had never even heard those words before. I didn't know anything about inflammatory bowel disease. I remember just feeling a little lost, right? I'd been experiencing these symptoms. So much of my life had changed, right? New marriage, new baby, all of these things. Was it connected to my pregnancy? I didn't know if that was something to do with it. I didn't know anything. No, I don't feel like my physician really gave me a good understanding of what it was, what to expect, what this meant for my future. And it was a lot of like asking a lot of questions during follow-up appointments, trying to piece it together to figure out what it what it really meant over time.
So how did you then navigate life after diagnosis, both physically and mentally, and maybe also take us through the different treatments that you've, that your doctor put you on to manage or try to manage your colitis?
Right. We started with Azacol, so mesalamine, at the very beginning. I physically and mentally, I cried a lot. It was overwhelming, and there were a whirlwind of emotions over the first couple of years, throughout the whole thing, really. I think there was a lot of fear of the unknown. And I hoped that, okay, well, I'm going to take this medication and the medication is going to help. And that's just what I'm going to have to do. And so that was the first approach, was kind of trusting the doctors to give me the answers, because I didn't know. And, you know, so then I was taking the Azacol, and then that wasn't enough. Symptoms would keep coming. So then we'd have to increase the dosage and increase the dosage. And that was a struggle for me, to just continuing to put more and more and more medication in my body, and it wasn't quite working. That was really hard to wrap my head around. How do I trust that this is what I'm going to be relying on, but then it's not working? And so wrapping your head around those failed medications kind of, it doesn't make me not trust the physician, but the process, I wasn't trusting the process of how am I supposed to heal. I have been on so many different medications. I'm probably forgetting some, but all the different versions of mesalamine, all of the Simponi and Humira and Entyvio, and I'm on Xeljanz now with combination therapy with Aprezo, which is a version of mesalamine. And I know I've done plenty other, multiple rounds of prednisone, steroids, Uceris when I didn't want to take prednisone. And I'm sure there's more that I am forgetting, but it has been a constant roller coaster of failed medication and increasing the dosage until you max out at that dose. And then you have to start over with something new, and all the time that it takes to even see if that medication is going to work in the first place. It's rough.
Absolutely. Azacol, yeah, I know it very well. Even Uceris, that's something that you don't always hear, but I had a small relapse once a couple of years after I achieved remission, and Uceris helped me at that stage. But wow, yeah, so you've sort of really done the A to Z almost of the different tiers of medications that we typically see in IBD treatments. So you were newly married, you had a child. How did you manage that part of your life while at the same time navigating the disease, going through flaring, trying these medications? I mean, dealing with IBD is one thing that takes a lot of energy. And I always say, you know, when we're flaring, that's about all the energy we have, right? But great, you have a husband, I'm sure he was supportive, but having a child at such a young age, how did you manage that? How did you navigate life as a mother?
That is such a big question. Yes, I was blessed to have a husband who could provide. And, you know, so I was lucky enough to stay at home with my son. I tried over time to do a couple things to try to contribute to the home and finances and things. But I was blessed to be able to stay at home and work on my health and being a mother. I felt often like a disappointment to my family. My son was young, and so I could be on the floor and play with him, and that was a check mark, a good thing. You know, as he got older, then it got harder with wanting to go do things and go to events and go outside of the house and be around other people and all of the social opportunities that mothers can have to connect. But I was overwhelmed and intimidated by some of those things. And so there was definitely a mom guilt for limited experiences with my son, or oh my goodness, the times of being out somewhere and then having to rush to the bathroom, the urgency, and then you have to haul your kid with you and try to make it. Just the stress level of trying to manage was so high that it was very easy to avoid situations like that. I have a great relationship with my son. I was with him, right? Like, in the long term, it was fine. He didn't know what he was missing out on. You know, it was just my guilt for not being able to be the version of mom that I wanted to be or thought I needed to be. But he got lots of attention and care, and we were at home together plenty. And so he was a driver for me to just keep going. Luckily, I had him, and it was a motivation to keep waking up every morning and keep trying and keep trying to improve my health and those sorts of things. So that mom role really saved me in a lot of ways, honestly.
So that's very interesting, because lots of times when we're flaring, we just kind of want to be by ourselves, right? And this is ties to this isolation that a lot of us experience when we're flaring, because the pain is so strong that this is all we want to deal with. Did you ever feel this desire to basically be by yourself, you know, for an extended period of time, to basically suffer in silence? Because yes, you had your husband as a support system, but then again, you had a son who was very young. And so even though you embraced this motherhood at that stage, as you just said, did you have those moments where you just thought, man, I just wish I could suffer in silence, you know, and I really don't want to be around anybody?
I would say it became a part of how I cope with life now. I still have a tendency to just want to shelter and isolate when big, overwhelming things happen, because it's a pattern. It's a learned pattern over time of whether it's fueled by, I don't want people to see me suffering, or I don't want to be a burden on other people. You know, I think that's some of that underlying mental narrative behind that isolation. Also embarrassment of the fact that I'm feeling what I'm feeling, but just that external stimulation. My body is taking all of my focus, all of my energy. One more person that I need to focus on outside of myself sometimes is just too much. So yes, absolutely. Can I just lay in my bed in pain, in tears, being angry with the fact that I feel this way right now? 100%. That definitely happened. Yes.
So you mentioned your body. And my next question is then, how did you keep hope alive when you knew that your body was basically working overtime against you, right? As you were navigating different treatments and setbacks.
Yeah. And it's this betrayal, right? When your own body betrays you, and then you can't even trust your own body to keep up with you as a person. I really struggled. Mentally, I really struggled. I went through some very dark and angry and bitter times because of the comparisons I saw between me and all the normal people. And what was the question? I'm so distracted by thinking about those times. What did you ask?
No, I just would like to know what you did or what your thought process was to keep this hope alive when you knew that your body was, you know, yeah, really betraying you.
Right. Yes. I don't think I had hope for a very, very long time. Though there was no keeping hope alive. It was just keeping me alive was the focus for a long time. Again, I had my son, so there was a reason to continue to exist. How did I keep hope alive? I think it became more of a, how do I just keep functioning in a way that can just keep up with life? I didn't have hope for anything better. I didn't have hope for healing. I saw my UC journey as, I'm just going to continue going through these patterns and these cycles, and I'm just going to have to deal with it. That was how I felt for the longest time. Just accept your new normal, right? I had to hit some really, really dark and low points before I got to the space where I was like, I can't do this. I can't be this way anymore. I have to make changes. I have to figure out how to take care of my health. I need to figure out what I can do to somehow generate my own hope, right? How to find that. And so really over time, I started learning more about taking care of my health. And I took a nutrition course. I was trying to go back to school, trying to do something with myself. I wanted to feel valuable in society because I didn't. And so I was going back to school. I took a nutrition course just to learn about taking better care of my health and fell in love, was fascinated by that. Another core memory, I had gained a ton of weight on prednisone and I hated myself after that. And I just really struggled mentally. And so I was like, well, maybe exercise. Maybe I can lose the weight. Maybe I'll start exercising. And I kind of felt like maybe that was going to be the hope. If I could find a way for my body to get a little stronger, then maybe that would give me a better capacity to live life. And I remember I was like, okay, well, the only way I know how to exercise is to go running, right? I think that's how you exercise, is you go running. And so I was like, I'm going to run from one mailbox to the next mailbox. Like that was my goal for like a week, just one mailbox to the next, just get outside. I mean, you can't go that far anyway when you're flaring anyway. And so just get outside and go from one mailbox to the next. And then I could run from one mailbox to two mailboxes and then three. And so it was slowly like that started sparking something within me of like, oh, I can achieve little goals and I can take care of myself and grow in that way. And I still hate running. I can run past a couple of mailboxes now, but eventually worked into like group exercise classes. And I just loved that. And so physical activity was really transformative to my sense of ability to do something, you know, and that grew over time. Definitely easier said than done. But I think that was a turning point in my life of just desperately needing something to change and trying to do something very, very small gave me some hope achieving those little things afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not just treatments, but lifestyle changes as well, at least to help with sort of like the mental load that you have sitting on your shoulders. So that's really great. Now, jumping to today, how are you feeling?
I hesitate to answer this question because I used to be so resentful against the people who were living well. Like, I'd be like, oh, yeah, that's not real, or they must have really mild conditions, or like, they're just in a short-term phase where it's going well. Like, that doesn't exist. And so the fact that I can literally say, man, I am healthier than I've ever been. I like myself in a way that I haven't before. I feel like I'm doing something with my life that's meaningful. And I've had opportunities. I do competitive jiu-jitsu. Like I fight, like I am so much better. And my UC has been in remission for a handful of years. And I'm constantly paying attention to making sure I keep it that way. And It's a transformation that I get to live now through so much hell and so much work and effort, but I'm great. And I know what a luxury that is. I know how valuable that is. I have been at the worst where I'm weak and useless and just broken. And so even just feeling happy is what a blessing.
And you just said it, you know, you've been in remission for a couple of years. We all know that remission is not a cure. So we definitely don't take it for granted. We hope that it's going to last forever. But how do you deal with, and maybe you don't, but I think most of IBDers, they kind of do. How do you deal with this fear that, you know, your remission time might be limited, that the next flare could just be around the corner? Is that something that you think about? And then when you do think about it, how do you handle it?
I think about it all the time. We've been conditioned to think about it. That is the pattern, is even when you feel good, you know it's not going to last. You know that next medication is going to fail. You know that even if you eat a bad meal and your body doesn't like it, you're like, oh my goodness, am I flaring? What have I done to myself? Why did I do that, right? And blame it on all the wrong things. And It is a conditioned response to live in fear of the next flare, even when you've been living in remission for a long period of time. I think about it all the time. I still get nervous. I genuinely have learned to pay really close attention to my body and kind of the natural signals that it you know, warns me of. And so, you know, something will shift or something will feel off. I can feel inflammation rising in my body and the panic. I need to make sure that this is my priority. I need to reset my life, make sure that I'm stable. I could just keep spinning on that topic. But that fear is so real. It will never go away. And how do I deal with it? I pay attention to that fear on a daily basis. And I make active choices to acknowledge that fear and make decisions on how I live my life to prevent future flares. I will also say that I've been doing this long enough to where there is a new belief in me that a flare is temporary. So I think that's a helpful thing too, after you've gone through it long enough, that at least understanding, wow, my body is really overwhelmed right now. Inflammation's going crazy, right? Something needs to shift, but it can. And there is a down after the height of intensity of disease activity. So I think that helps too, to lessen the fear just a little bit when you start to believe that flares can be temporary.
And it's perfectly fine to be fearful. I always say that we are not oversensitive. We are not over emotional about our disease. We live through this hell. There's a reason why we have this fear. And I don't think that we should apologize for this fear either, right? Even when we're in remission, and it doesn't matter if we're in remission 5 years or 10 years, because we do know that remission could end just like that, right? So I'm one of these people that say, like, we should sort of try and learn to almost embrace this fear, because yes, it keeps us in check, you know, and like you just mentioned, you know, it brings about changes in your lifestyle, changes for your body, lifestyle changes for your mental state. So if you look back now, this entire journey from age 22 until now, in what ways do you think that colitis has changed you as a person?
So many ways. There's a positive and a negative answer to that. I'll start with the negative, because ending on positive is always better. But it was trauma. It's a real life trauma, right? And so mentally and emotionally, it changes the way that you see yourself and your own self-concept. It changes your view on life and priorities and values. There's a lot of grief and loss associated. So it has definitely added that need for healing in my life. At the same time, man, I feel like I have a level of compassion for other people that I probably would never have had before. I feel like I'm so much more in tune with seeing that, like, private hidden hurt within others that everybody carries. And I'm grateful for that, right? It gives opportunities for deep and meaningful connection with others, which is fueling and healing. But it's also forced me to become a better version of myself, right? It's forced me to learn a lot, right? I've learned and gained so many things, and I've had experiences that have forced me to self-reflect in different ways and take care of myself in different ways and learn about, I mean, it changes everything. Your relationships and your activities and your hopes and your goals. How does it influence my life? It's changed it drastically. It took away my life, everything I expected my life to be, and then forced me to rebuild a new one. And luckily, that fight has rebuilt one that I never could have imagined otherwise. Yeah.
So speaking of other people, I am currently doing a regimen of physiotherapy. And so you talk with your therapist, and naturally we landed on the topic of IBD, and I mentioned colitis, and he looked at me and said, oh, what is that? And so I thought like, oh, here we go. All right, here I go into my spiel of like explaining what it is, try and keep it concise, right? I'm curious to hear from you how you explain colitis and what you're going through IBD to people who've never heard of it when you face that.
This might be comedic, but I feel like there's got to be a little flair of dramatic for people to even comprehend how intense it is. And so I will always say something along the lines of, well, it's an autoimmune illness, meaning my body's immune system sees my colon as a foreign object and just mounts an attack. So my body is basically attacking itself from the inside out. So then I have these open wounds, these ulcerations in my colon that just bleed. And that's ulcerative colitis, which that
I like it.
It is. Your body's killing you from the inside out.
Exactly, exactly. And then sometimes you'd be like, oh, wow, you know, really? It's like, yeah, it's really that dramatic. Yeah. You know? There's really no better way of saying it, you know, right. Except that you could say, well, I'm constantly running to the toilet and I have to be careful that I don't shit myself.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like that explanation.
Rushing to just crap blood. Like that's, yes. Yeah.
So you had a very strong support system, you mentioned, through, you know, via your husband. Your son was maybe a little bit too young at the time to support you, but in a way, like you explained to us, he did support you, right? He gave you sort of this support system. But being around somebody, again, your husband, who really was there for you, what kind of advice, what kind of message do you have for people who are living close to someone with colitis, who are living with someone who has colitis, who are living with someone who got recently diagnosed, who is struggling? What's your message to those people? What's your advice to those people?
The relationships in a marriage with a chronic illness are difficult. Yes, my ex-husband was doing the best that he could to be supportive, but there's still a limitation of understanding, and there's a pressure, right? Not only that I was fully aware that this isn't really what he signed up for when he married me, right? And so I carried a lot of that burden and disappointment, feelings of disappointment. Not that he made me feel that way, but I felt it. But it also shifted his life into being more of a kind of a caretaker, right? Like paying attention to how I was feeling and having to navigate my frustrations and emotional roller coasters. And so, yes, he did his best to be supportive, but it is not easy for either partner in a relationship when you're doing that. And so that can be hard. I think when I say this next part, it's not directly tied at him, not at all. But in general, for those supporting, right, family and friends supporting others, I think I'd just tell them to believe their UC friend. Like, just believe them. Believe them when they're exhausted. Believe them when the fatigue is taking over. Believe them when they tell you that they just don't feel well. To actually honor that and trust that when they're actually vocalizing that out loud, that's when it's real. Because most of us aren't even going to say it in the first place. But, right, when we're saying it out loud and being like, I'm setting those boundaries, allow people to set their boundaries, respect those, bring joy and light and hope, spend time with them. Even that means like playing a card game on the couch together, right? Just allow yourself to adapt to their needs, believe them when they're talking about how trashy they feel, and let them know that they're still very much loved and valued, despite the fact that they are not living in the way we all expect to be living.
Very well said. I like that approach. So now we talked about others. Let's shift it back to you. Looking back, do you have any regrets, any guilt about anything, of how you handled the disease, how you navigated it?
I wish I could have learned faster. I wish I could have avoided a lot of suffering, right? I mean, that's just part of life's journey is slow growth and development learning. I wish I could have told myself then everything I know now. Well, that would have been great. But I wish I would have been kinder to myself, I think. You know, I just told you that others need to believe us when we feel sick. I should have given myself that same grace more often. I should have allowed myself to trust that when my body felt like trash, that I needed to not feel guilty about that. I don't know why I felt so ashamed and so guilty and so embarrassed instead of just being kind and accepting and giving myself permission to be different and to take care of myself and live in a different way than others. So much easier said than done. But man, that would have reduced a lot of suffering to be able to just have nicer narratives in my head throughout the whole experience, for sure.
And then let's not forget to not wait for months, ignoring symptoms, especially any sort of bleeding, you know, from the rectal area, right?
Minor detail, don't bleed for months and not tell anyone. Yes, yes. Actually, that's a really good point because I kind of continued that pattern. I hated letting anyone know that I was sick. I really refused to talk about it for the longest time. I still get uncomfortable sometimes admitting it. And I just had this sense of pride that I didn't want people to know I was sick and struggling. I didn't want to be seen as weak. I didn't want to be seen as sick. I didn't want extra treatment, extra attention, or like those, oh, tilted head responses, you know? And so I genuinely fought to hide it and just function, right? Function out around the world and then just come home and crash. That was not healthy for me. I did not allow myself to build an extensive support system because I was so ashamed of what I was experiencing. That is also a regret of being so self-isolating physically and emotionally. Yeah.
So that's really perfect because now you've touched on what I want to talk to you next, and that is sort of like being open about the disease. And you just mentioned you sort of kept it to yourself and you were not really open about it. I want to ask you what happened that you changed that direction, right? Going from sort of being embarrassed about it, not wanting to mention anything, to being more open about it. And the reason why I ask you this is because you are quite outspoken about it, especially on social media, you know, TikTok. And this is one of the ways that we actually connect it, right? And I've seen your stuff and you seem to have absolutely no fear to, you know, put the camera in your face and to talk about colitis. So what brought that about? And at what point sort of did you have this epiphany of like, hey, let's switch to being actually open about this and talking about it and trying to raise awareness? Was it a singular event that sort of flip the switch, or was it sort of a gradual opening, if we can call it that?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. Yes, there's a singular event. I will also say that I'm more comfortable telling my story, and social media allows for this, to people who I know relate to it, right? So it's a lot easier when we're building a community with one another. And if I'm sharing things virtually, I'm speaking to the person that I know understands and is living with the same kind of suffering, right? It's so much easier to connect on that level. I still get very insecure about people who kind of know me listening in on those things, which is, again, this learned response over time of trying to isolate. And I'm excited for that to shift and change even more over time. But what did change for me, I had the opportunity eventually to end up getting my PhD. So I went into a PhD program that focused on health promotion and health behavior and health education. And so within my PhD program, it was very research-based. So I did my dissertation and I'm creating a research project from scratch that, you know, took me multiple years. And, you know, it's the big question of, okay, what topics do I want to address? What do I want my focus to be? I knew deep down inside that ulcerative colitis the whole point of me gaining my education over time was just to learn more about how to take care of my own health and understand it in a bigger, broader context. So I knew that my education was focused on understanding self-management of inflammatory bowel disease. But making a decision to do a dissertation on ulcerative colitis meant that I had to tell all of my mentors and anyone who was listening and anyone who was publishing that I had ulcerative colitis. And that was terrifying for me. I wish I could understand more why it was so terrifying. But again, it was just this, I don't want to be labeled in a certain way. I don't know. And so it delayed me because I knew what kind of work I wanted to do, but I was so intimidated by implying to the world now that what I live and breathe is ulcerative colitis. So finally getting to that point of realizing that my life is going to have purpose if I use my experiences to benefit the lives of others. Like that's what I have to hold on to. And so as I worked on that dissertation, first finally being like, okay, this is the topic. My PhD mentor was like, well, you don't have to tell people you have UC. You can just work on the topic. And I was like, it's not the same if I just talk from a general space. Like, I'm in this. I need to own this. But I had the opportunity to go into the homes of multiple different ulcerative colitis patients and speak to them one-on-one about their stories and how they were navigating the process. And it was so healing for me personally to connect with other people's stories and to connect with others who understood what I had lived through as well and share that. And so I very quickly learned that the more I'm authentic to myself and what I've experienced and what I value most because of these life experiences, I mean, it has shaped who I am. Why would I not own who I am now because of my experiences? So the more I tried to be more authentic to myself and realize that I wasn't alone and that there were a lot of other people dealing with this, that healing moment allowed me to give myself more permission to open up and really take ownership of this has been so much of my life. It has shaped who I am today in so many ways. I have to include it as part of who I am. I have to.
And you don't stop there because you are on a quest to help people, right? Help people with IBD, with colitis, and you do coaching as well. Talk to me a little bit about this initiative, what it is that you're doing, why you want to do that, and how this is done, how people can reach you even.
Yes, thank you. So as I was working on this research, I would have the opportunity to go to medical research conferences, Crohn's and Colitis Congress, things like that, where I was interacting with the other big thought leaders, the physicians, and the research that's being done. And it was just so evident to me that no one is filling the space outside of the physician's office, right? And so you go, you have your doctor's appointment, and they help diagnose and check where you are and make adjustments to your meds. And they spend 10, 15 minutes with you. And then you move along. And then you go home. And you have the daily burden of living with UC, the mental and emotional, the social burden, trying to figure out diet, trying to figure out how to get your health back under control. And there's just, especially at the time I was in where this was just becoming more and more evident to me, there's not a lot of support or resources or provision of care that's truly addressing that comprehensive approach. All of the pieces of the puzzle that are living with UC. And there have been a lot of strides in the field to fill that gap. But that's where I belong. I knew that that's where I belonged because not only did I have my own story, but I had this educational background that was really filled with lifestyle interventions and health behavior and the psychological process that works through that. And so I ended up pivoting out of the research world, had some great opportunities, learned a ton. But I knew that instead of just running research that would get published that maybe would inform some physicians, maybe hopefully some policies, I just wanted to connect with the people. I knew that that's where I belonged, is to actually using my life experiences and everything I learned professionally, personally, to make a difference in the struggle, that daily struggle. So yeah, now I've pivoted out of that world and then moved into that one-on-one mentorship and working with individuals who I did this alone, right? For so long. So many of us are doing this alone. I had to teach myself. There's so much trial and error that comes through and so many mixed messages. And how do you discern what's true, what's not true, what's useful, what's not useful, right? It's just so messy trying to wrap your head around how to truly get your life back on track. And that's my purpose, is to work directly with individuals who can benefit from everything that I've learned, and genuine compassion, genuine understanding, genuine care, and a genuine partnership to run the journey together instead of alone. That is my goal, is to provide that comprehensive picture and that connection and support. So I try my best to offer as much as I can to help support everyone. And then when people want that one-on-one connection and an additional, I don't want to say hand-holding, because I don't do everything for you, right? It's everyone's individual journey, but that connection and that support, that one-on-one mentorship there, that's what I do.
And that's really a great initiative, and really seems to, like you said, to be filling a certain void that not many IBD patients even thought about, really. And I think it's really great. We're going to for sure put your contact info in the show notes as well, so that people listening can reach out to you at their leisure. So Kelly, as we sort of come to a close, I have two more questions for you. I want to take a quick trip back into the past, and then we'll take a quick trip into the future. Based on everything that we talked about today, based on your entire journey, if you could speak to yourself back at age 22 on the day that you got diagnosed, what would you tell yourself?
I'd probably hug her first. I would probably hug her and hold on to her for a long time, cry with her probably. I'll try to keep my emotions at bay, but I think I would tell her that diagnosis and all of the hell that was coming in the future would build, if she fought really hard, would build a strength and resiliency that she couldn't even imagine could exist, right? That there would be this capacity to do and think and see in the world that only that level of hell can generate, and to fight to start learning how to take care of your physical and emotional health as fast as possible right away. And, you know, that paying attention to what you eat and how much you move, and that nervous system regulation and your mental health and your sleep, all the things, all the pieces, I would have given her all that information. But there is hope, right? There is hope for that self-development. And hard things, it's like diamonds, right? A lot of pressure and a lot of hard has the capacity to create something beautiful and a much more pure, authentic version of you. And I wouldn't be who I am today without what I've experienced, for sure.
Message of power, a message of strength, a message of hope, a message of self-care as well. So I think that really sums up what dealing with this disease is. So you mentioned it earlier, it's always great to end up with hope, with a positive, you said. Looking ahead, and this might be a tough question to answer, but I'm sure you have some sense of hope at least for it. Do you think that we will see a cure to IBD in our lifetime?
Oh, I would love to end on a hopeful note. Shoot, that's, you know, I have thought about this a ton. I think there's two answers to that question. And it depends on what you count as cure, because I think there are amazing medical strides happening, right? The science is getting much better at developing effective treatments for UC. So I think that the medical care will improve, and the stigma will reduce, and the openness and the connections will improve. I think all of that is headed in a good direction. At the same time, our society, the pressures of our lives, autoimmune illnesses are not going away. And the root cause of chronic inflammatory illnesses is inflammation. And that is coming from the air that we breathe and the things that we tell ourselves and the things that we ingest into our bodies, the experiences we have, the trauma that we hold. Life is just getting so much harder as time goes on. And that affects our bodies, and our bodies can't keep up with the world around us right now in the best way, because we shouldn't be able to keep up with all of that. So I think that the pressure of real life is getting stronger, which is going to lead to more autoimmune illnesses within ourselves and within the population. And so I think it will be harder and harder to manage UC if we continue to match the world around us and lifestyles like that. So do I think there will be a cure in our lifetime? No. But is there hope for a better quality of life and genuine thriving? Yes. Yes, I do.
Pragmatic, down to earth, with a little bit of hope as well. So I'm not even going to further elaborate, because I really think that you summed it up in a very, very, very good, solid way. Kelly, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me today. It was really a pleasure for me to talk about your colitis journey and IBD in general. For you, I wish you nothing but the best and continuing remission. And thank you also for what you're doing, and keep speaking out and keep helping people. I think sense of community is really what we need in IBD, Crohn's and colitis. So keep doing that, and all the best to you. And thank you so much again for being here today.
Thank you. You too. Absolutely.
That's it for today's episode of Talking Shit, presented by Colitis Unfiltered. I'm Frank Tabring, and if this hit home or hit your gut, do us a favor, subscribe to the show, and follow us at Colitis Unfiltered on YouTube, Substack, Instagram, Threads, TikTok, and Reddit. We'll see you soon for more inspiring stories from the bathroom floor.